Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.
We thought it would be useful to summarize a very lively discussion that we had yesterday evening on the carbon-14 dating, so to preclude resurrecting the entire, no pun intended, resurrecting the entire conversation again this morning. There was a general consensus that we should proceed with radiocarbon dating on the samples that Giulio so magnanimously donated to us to... Okay. In any case, we have some samples. Grazie, signore. And we're going to press on. Bob Villarreal is going to take responsibility in sorts for the chemical validation and preparation of the samples so that we're not, there's no question about what's going to be ultimately submitted. Some concerns were expressed by you in the audience about various things, including the general problem of dating linen. There was also concerns expressed about preferential isotopic diffusion and contamination, neutron capture perhaps, changing the date, carbon monoxide, which I believe is going to be addressed elsewhere, and the generic problem of linen degradation. We invited any of you who have serious concerns about these issues or other issues that we haven't talked about to submit a white paper. Now, to put my money where my mouth is, I'm going to submit a white paper to Bob on subject of linen degradation. I would invite everybody else to do the same. Quantify it and let us take a look at it. And I say us, the collective. We will review these concerns. We're aware of some of them already. For example, we are aware of the fact that the carbon-14 production rate in the atmosphere changes over the years. It's a very slow change because of carbon-14 is produced in the upper atmosphere by cosmic ray spallation. And over the course of time, it changes. And so the uptake in living matter of carbon-14 changes. However, it's a slow change. The half-life of carbon-14 is a little over 5,000 years, and the typical limit for dating is something like 50,000 years, so we're well within the boundaries of that. And over the time frame that we're talking about, the Arizona Tree Ring Lab has calibrated those very carefully, so I don't think there's any question that that is going to be a factor in the ultimate dating. But in any case, we have to be very careful here. So please submit a paper if you have a serious concern. What we decided to do, which I thought was a pretty good idea, is just use half the samples we have initially. We need some control samples for chemical validation, specifically because of the linen degradation issue. We want to make sure, of course, firstly, that we are dating linen, unquestionably, and that the linen is uncontaminated, but in order to make sure that we're looking at what we think we're looking at, there's a degradation issue that spectra, for example, the infrared spectra of linen changes over time. So we need some dated linen. And along the same lines, I thought it would be useful to actually prep those samples for dating as well, so that rather than submitting a single sample for dating, we'll submit three or four others, including, samples from mummy wrappings or some other linen that we know the dates of. And we'll do this in a blind way. We'll submit a blind test so that the radiocarbon laboratory, Oxford, for example, will get four samples. They won't know which one is specifically the linen from the cloth. We will, by that procedure, we will validate linen in general. Okay, so there won't be any question about that, as well as getting a date that it is completely unbiased from the daters. Not that it would be anyways, but I think having a blind test is probably a pretty smart thing to do, in my view. So anyways, that's kind of the plan. After the samples will be, after the samples are chemically validated and prepped, Bob's going to seal them in a mayonnaise jar with a secret Batman ring and hold them until we're ready to do something. And I think at that point there needs to be some small convention of folks to review where we're at and see if we're ready to submit them for dating. Okay, so that's the plan. I'm sure there's going to be some more comments on that later on this morning, but I thought I would summarize it so to obviate, you know, resurrecting the entire discussion over again. If there's any comments, again, please, I mean, serious comments about concerns with the dating, then submit a white paper. You know, that's kind of the way to do it, rather than just, you know, expressing your concern verbally. And it's a group effort, right? I mean, we're all in this together, as was stated yesterday, and we really need to collectively work on making this right the second time. I think as was pointed out yesterday as well by somebody in the audience that, you know, we're not going to get too many chances to do this without losing credibility completely. Whereas to the point where nobody's going to believe the date anyway. So we have to be really careful and. We all have to participate in that. So, thank you. That's what I had to say. Appreciate it.
All right. We were going to have an hour for the discussion on the restoration and other topics. We're actually down to about 45 minutes, but we'll see what happens. Barry, again, will moderate as he did last night. So, I'll turn it over to Barry.
Okay, here I am again. The one thing that I was thinking about, I usually don't think about these things too much in advance, I just kind of get up and do it. But the one thing I was thinking about relative to the restoration is that, and I've probably been somewhat guilty of it myself, there's just constant blaming kind of just seems to be so out of context with the subject matter at hand. So if we're going to talk about the restoration, I would like to hear it be more discussed in a more creative fashion, a more positive fashion, and not just complaining and bitching, if I can use that word, about what has been done. If you look closely at the page on my website that is the page called Comments on the Restoration, the first thing you'll notice is that I didn't make any. I published the comments of people who were far more qualified than I am to have an opinion on the subject, but I did make one statement in my introduction on that page, and you can go online and check it out and you'll see that I'm not kidding about it, and I said, whatever the issue, it's been done. It cannot be undone, and there is nothing that complaining and moaning and crying and being angry is going to change. I mean, it's done. So the restoration is now a part of the history of the Shroud. For better or for worse, whether we like it or we don't, that's the way it is. So with the caveat that I'd rather not have this be an attack session on what's already done in the past, can't be undone. So I think a discussion about anything besides that aspect of the restoration, I think that would be more constructive. Otherwise, you know, we can all just sit around and call people names, but enough of that's been done, I think, already. So now, did I preclude any comments?
can I have one comment?
Russ would like a comment. Here's the mic. If Russ a comment. And I'm just going to moderate this. Like I said,
I totally agree with you. We don't need to turn this into a big complaint section. But for the benefit of the camera and Shroud U and the uninitiated who may listen to this sometime in the future, I think it would be good to at least perhaps summarize why there is criticism of the restoration. You know, and maybe rather than have this become a big, you know, bull session, maybe if you could just kind of thumbnail what the criticisms have been so that we have an understanding, and then we can move into how do we go forward, how do we, you know.
Thanks for throwing the ball right back at me. I've got a microphone right here. Well, okay. I think there's a valid point there. So thanks a lot, Russ. I'll get even later. I'll tell you what. I can encapsulate it pretty quickly by saying that the biggest problem was the lack of consultation of any scientists involved in the Shroud. that has any kind of real firsthand knowledge, none were really involved in the restoration, and I think that was the primary problem. I have to say that from my point of view, because of the interviews I did with Ray Rogers, while I was sitting there, and we talked about the new cloth that was sewn on the back of the shroud, he asked me, in the interview, he was asking me, he says, well, did anyone do any chemical analysis of that cloth? Does anyone know that cloth wasn't treated with something that, now that it's permanently up against the back of the shroud, was it treated with something that might long-term do damage? And I thought about it, and I thought, God, I never thought of that. Neither did anyone else. And that's the point, that there was a lack of consultation with people who could have advised on the best way to conserve and preserve the shroud. And I remember, as a matter of fact, I put that quote of Al Adler's into the Rogers video, because Adler said to me one time, he said, Barry, he said, there's an image and a cloth, and until we understand them both, we can't really preserve either. And so I put that into the thing. So I think that for the students that might be watching this somewhere later on video, the issue was, more than anything, I think, a lack of consultation with chemists, physicists, or other appropriate experts that would have perhaps actually helped preserve the shroud and conserve it, and provided a scientific basis for some of the things that were done, rather than sort of just let's do it and let it go. So I think that really fundamentally is the issue, lack of scientific advice. Okay? Ray? Ray doesn't need that microphone, Ray. Just hold it away from
me. My voice is getting tired. I'll try to keep this pretty short. I entirely endorse the point that we stop looking backwards and look forwards. And also, let's not be not only a dead horse, but a lot of living people who have received a great deal of criticism over this and have got to be smarting from it. From my point of view, the thing that's an issue is that the shroud seems to be held so narrowly and with sort of parochial psychology. And what would be helpful is if some sort of international, I don't want to say commission, but some kind of a procedure, if it could be put together so that when actions about the shroud were going to be undertaken or consideration, that this body, and it could be rotated, it doesn't have to be even all that official, because official seems to be a problem. If it's official, it's deadly in the shroud world, it seems to me. Every time I look, anything official seems to go downhill fast. But if it could be a group that was consulted, formed for consultation, and they can do with the consultation when it's all over whatever they want, because that's what they're going to do anyway. But at least if you could get a protocol in place that said before you do it, you should consult, and then that consultation go on record.
Why am I smiling? They had 80 names on a list of available scientists and consultants.
Well, they didn't consult them, though.
But they didn't consult them. So,
I'm saying that you try to move forward, make a recommendation to the Vatican, make a recommendation to Turin, that an international consulting body be formed, and that it, in fact, be used. Now, that might not work. It wouldn't surprise me if it didn't work. But if you don't advance it as something that's needed, if nothing else, than to keep peace with the international community that's interested in the shroud. I mean, this was a tremendous, I think, public relations debacle of the First Order in the shroud world. I mean, they just, and it showed in the siege mentality in 2005.
Pretty much a self-inflicted wound, right?
Well, yeah, but that's still, however it was inflicted, it's a wound. And we need to go going forward. We need to try to find methods that keep ourselves from stabbing ourselves again, sort of. And I mean that in a kind of a larger sense.
I think about. How about? Morning.
I just wanted to say we've got the three samples, and we're going to get two or three other samples from different people that
right.
are going to come in. And as we analyze these, I'm certainly going to send the analysis, the results, and the spectrum to Sue and Barry. And I don't know, certainly they're going to send it to Julio, but how many other people here are going to be interested in knowing the results of this?
Well,
and how do we get it to them?
Well, we get it to them by, I can certainly put it on my website. I mean, if we're doing this in the open, which we all already agreed that we needed to do, then I don't have any qualms about publishing it and making it available to everybody. I mean, that's the whole purpose initially of all of us building our websites, is to get this information out to a broader audience, a global audience. And I've already published so many kind of the harder scientific things that I'm happy to include that and just make it available. It's kind of a place where some people expect to find that kind of stuff anyway. So that's easy. It used to be there was no method of dissemination of information in the world of the Shroud. Now there are hundreds of websites and lots of really good, credible ones, so that getting the information out is far less of a problem now. It's getting the information itself that can be disseminated that's become the problem. So I don't see that as a problem. You know, as you were working on all the materials that you ultimately showed yesterday, I was getting those PowerPoints from you. The hardest part for me for the last 9 months was keeping my mouth shut and not talking about what you guys were doing. And anybody who's been here for more than an hour already knows that me keeping my mouth shut is something I have trouble doing anyway. But to keep my mouth shut about the fact that Los Alamos National Laboratories was examining shroud samples again, whew, boy, that was a tough one for me to sit on. Rex.
Could I just say this? I'm an outsider to America, as you will realize.
Yeah, but you're no outsider, Rex.
And it seems to me that from what I gather from talking to people and listening to people and observing, that the politics behind everything that happens at the Shroud is one of the greatest problems.
Of course.
And I guess that's true in every country as well, in all of our endeavors. But I suspect that one of the problems with getting access, indeed I think it's even been said from Turin in the past, is, well, if the international community is going to keep fighting with each other, we're not going to talk to them. And I wonder just how feasible is it for the leading country in the world, that's America, with the greatest number of experts, scientists, and Shirleys, and, of course, a considerable number of politically separate groups, which is very sad.
Yep.
I've always tried to avoid being aligned with anybody. Yep. As you know, I've tried to walk a path which isn't easy.
Right.
And I just wonder how feasible is it to do what, in fact, at the '05 conference, Mike Minot said, let's kiss and make up. He said that at the dinner, and I don't think everybody went to the dinner.
No.
And they didn't miss anything. They didn't miss anything.
Right. But he said that, but then he turned around and did the opposite.
Well, exactly. So, all these interpretations are there. But it just seems to me that if somehow that could be solved, that problem, and there are about three or four or five identifiable camps within America alone.
I totally agree with you there, and I also can point to the fact that right in Italy, if you're not from Turin, you're pretty much on the outs now. If you're from Padua or from Rome, the Turinese are not interested. They don't really want, and again, I didn't want to turn this into criticism, but I have observed, and it is my personal opinion, that the folks in Turin would prefer to do this themselves without the benefit or aid of anyone outside of their own circle. Now, that's my opinion, and I said that first, but that's what I've observed over the last 30 or so years.
Now,
and it's
unfortunately, by doing that in '02,
yeah.
Of course, they've shown
so
how inefficient that
let
is.
He who has not sinned cast the first stone. And so, look, if one goes back to when I first built the website and first started coming to these conferences in the 90s, I think 98, 97, the first one, I kept saying, look, remember what STIRP was. It was a group of multidisciplined experts working each within their own field, working in unison as a team. Why is the STIRP body of data on the Shroud still the most significant and probably the most reliable scientific data that exists? Is because we worked together, we worked within our disciplines, we published the information in credible places, and we did work. I mean, you know, seeing my brother Joe Asset after 28 years, it was like seeing my long-lost brother. We were close, and we cared. And I think a lot of that's been lost. There's a lot of vying for, jockeying for position. Well, I want to be the one to be in charge, and there's a lot of that.
It's just something that occurs to me while you're speaking, and this may be absurd, but is there any possibility that we could somehow make some direct representation to the Pope, who after all owns the thing?
You're asking me?
When I met Ratzinger about 10 years ago, and he's a big shrey.
Oh, I know.
He's a very big supporter of it, and I had a one-to-one for half an hour with him.
And it
annoys all my Catholic friends, because I'm not one, when I show the photograph of me and Ratzinger, but who haven't met him. But you know, I wonder if there is the possibility of getting through directly over a bar that will be immediately relegated to the...
Well, from my understanding, first of all, Isabel Pichick, when we were going over to Turin, when John Paul II was Pope, she would have dinner with Ratzinger in Rome every time she went over there. They're close personal friends, and I think going back for decades. But you're asking me about what the procedure is, and, you know, there's Rex. The one thing I've learned from the outside, way outside looking in, is if you think the politics in America is pretty intense, the politics in the Vatican or in Rome... is, or in Italy, I always tell people when they say, well, how can you say that? I say, remember who Machiavelli was. He was Italian. And so there's a lot of kind of intrigues that go on right within the Vatican or Rome or Italy. So the answer to your question is, I sure don't know, Rex, but if somebody knows how to do that, and you know, I actually have a friend who's been here, you've met my federal prosecutor friend Larry Schauff, who has some friends in Rome, and he and I have been discussing some of these things. And somebody, by the way, Larry, before you were here, somebody was saying, well, you know, somebody should use a trial as a basis to get some of this information out in the format of a trial. He and I have been discussing that specific concept for, what, 2 years, 3 years? So, you know, there's a lot of good ideas and a lot of nice ways to attempt to try things, but my frustration is, we can try and become apolitical, and I have seen, you know, even at this meeting, some cordialness between groups and individuals that may not always be so cordial to each other, and I've seen that, and I'm always in favor of that, but how do you break the barriers over in Italy? And getting to people like the Pope is something that a nice Jewish boy like me doesn't have a whole lot of experience at, but like I said, my friend Larry and others who might have some contacts or some influential friends in that area might be in a better position to make that effort. Look, I don't think that it's a bad thing to try. So I think it's a good idea, but I'm certainly not qualified to suggest how that might be done.
Gary, I just point out real quickly that... Julio had, there was a picture of Julio at the Pope and Neil Swenson's new book.
Right, right.
So Julio was out of the room for a few minutes. We were talking about possibly going directly to the Pope somehow, and Barry mentioned Isabel's relationship with him. You've had an audience with him, so that might be something.
I also remember that there are right ways and wrong ways to approach the Pope. I remember what Harry Gove did in 1987, 88. He was so upset with the change in the radiocarbon dating protocol that he wrote an open letter to the Pope, which was published in La Stampa. I think within 20 minutes of the article hitting the streets, Harry Gove was persona non grata in his lab, removed from the list of those labs that would examine the shroud.
We have a couple other comments.
Sure. It's the chain of command, of course. Well, one thing I learned from Harry Gove is the right way to talk to the Pope is not through the media. And Harry found that out as well. That's what he did. Well, that's what he did, and unfortunately, it cost him dearly. Yeah. So I know that's not the right approach.
You ready?
Anybody?
I was really taken with the concept of having an independent group of a commission that would see it and be presented as, say, the Friends of the Shroud, who would like for the truth about the Shroud to be made known. And my thought was that, and I just have thought, that it might be possible to have some prominent individual who is not a political person. It would have been someone like Audrey Hepburn, somebody who is recognized as a devout person, who would take an interest and be able to present the concern for the shroud at a personal level, but who would be elevated enough to be recognized.
And to have enough influence, perhaps.
Yes.
I think that's a good idea.
And if anybody...
Do you know anyone?
I just told you, I don't know. But the point is, that doesn't mean someone like that couldn't be pinpointed and approached and asked for this help.
I think that's a good idea. No, they're a very valid point. Like I say, if you've got someone in mind, let us know. We'll contact them. Francis.
I live in the New York area. I've been in dialogue with, I've written a couple letters to Cardinal Egan, who was very close by to Rome. He served in the Roman Rota, which is the church's highest court, for many years. He's probably going to just be cardinal for another year, and then there's talk he might be going back.
Have you already discussed it with him, or do you correspond?
He's responded. He's delegated to a Monsignor, but I'm still persisting at it. I've met the Monsignor personally. He wanted to tell me what was going on here, so I know I have a lot of connections in the Catholic world, and one of the things I've learned in life is that something that might appear difficult to one person can be very easy for another person to do, and that's what we just saw, I think, last night. Here we have a chemist out in Los Alamos. I mean, he can test these threads no sweat, So it's just a matter of finding the right people who can do it. That's why I never get discouraged. So I know there are people out there.
Well, in our conversations, Francis and I have been conversing now for, about a year?
Yeah, I'd say so.
And, I constantly encouraged him, and I continue to do so, that, yes, give it the shot. Because there is no one person who's in charge. There is no one person who can do it better than someone else. And the Shroud belongs to everybody. And so there is no one that should be excluded from having a voice if they have something to say. To the tune of the fact that if you look at my website, it says, "Welcome to our website." Because it's not my website, it's the website of all those who've contributed and all those who come to it. So the same idea applies. If somebody has access to someone, I think, go for it.
Harry, Dr. Seuss has a...
Hey, all right, Patrick.
Yeah, and you have to see what happens with protocols. So in March, we went to Turin and we had a meeting with Don Giuseppe Giberti, Bruno Barberi, Nello Palacino, and we were there with Aminoam and Father Guerra. Father Guerra was very interested in the procedure. So we said, what happens? Okay, a protocol is submitted to Turin. What does that mean? It goes to a scientific commission. They decide what happens with that. And they are the first filter. Then we asked, do you ask for opinions? Yeah, once in a while we ask for international experts to look at it. Next step. Where does it go then? Then it goes to the cardinal, what goes through the first filter. The cardinal decides what is being sent to Cardinal Bertoni, Secretary of State. So that's the second filter. Then it goes to Cardinal Bertoni, and he consults a Pontifical Scientific Commission, and they take a decision what is being done. So we said, okay, what happened to the, for example, the Mubarak Group protocol that was submitted 2-3 years ago? He said, well, we revised that, and we said, well, that looks good, okay. So when was it sent to Cardinal Bertone? He said, about 8 months ago. What did you hear about it? certainty of anything. Did you check? Yeah, that's very difficult to do. So it's a quite complicated procedure.
It goes into the black hole. Nothing comes out.
No, you don't know what happens with it. But being European, I think you know the Italian mentality better than Americans, I think. Except for Don Corleone, etc.
Oh, yeah. But, that's not my benchmark. That's not my benchmark.
That's an offshoot. Anyway, I go every 6 months to Turin and make appointments with Don Giuliani, with Bruno, and everybody I want to meet. The scientific commission in Turin is basically the first, second generation scientist that we talk about. And not, for example, people like the younger ones, like we have present here. So it is a difficult procedure, but you have to press it. It means you have to use diplomacy. You need somebody that goes there very regularly and checks out where the papers are, what is being done with them. And even when it goes to Cardinal Pattoni, you have to look at the people around Cardinal Pattoni. He has a couple of bishops and his secretaries. You have to talk to them. There's one French bishop that is his second secretary, and he is very pro-Shroud. So you have to contact all these people. And you know right. What the papers are, you know what is going to be done with it.
Well, I think Petrus.
So that is the whole procedure that you have to follow from the beginning till the end. If you submit a paper to a scientific magazine, you have to follow up also. You have to, what is happening with it? Who is reviewing it? All these people do something.
I think
and that is the same that you have to do with the protocols. It is a lot of diplomacy, and it means that you have to go very regularly over there and understand also the Italian mentality. If you come as an American and you talk the way as an American as Italian, then it's not the way to do it.
Well, I think
because it's too direct for Italians.
I think one of the problems
is not Latin.
You are a moderator. I'm sorry, but as a moderator, it's very good to hear everybody's opinion.
Right.
And then at the end, I would love to hear you summarize.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Fair enough.
Thank you very much.
If a fresh approach is needed, I think one thing has to be, one group that has to be involved are the Legionnaires of Christ. For those that don't know, it's the fastest growing group of Catholic priests. They are the best formed, but most importantly, they're very close to the Pope. And also, they're right now, as we've heard, very close to the Shroud. I've seen their demonstration in Jerusalem, and now we hear that they're going to be doing more. I think we need to get grounded with them, if not let them basically carry the water on this. And if, because what this group needs, they now need proven credibility for the trial. They may be able to get us access to additional samples that are, you know, fresh off the shroud. I think they could do a lot of good, but we ought to at least try to get them involved. And the second thing is, I was curious as to whether the protocol for this carbonating will be written up in a white paper. Because are those blind samples going to be done at the same time as the samples on the shroud? Or are we going to verify that the carbonating can be done correctly on old cloth before we submit our old cloth to it?
I think Bob, the work that Bob's doing, I think, was more about the spectra, if I'm not mistaken. Just to sort of gain a database of spectra is what he was going to do. So it's not direct carbon dating. They don't do carbon dating at Los Alamos.
That has nothing to do with weapons.
Two comments quickly. The first one, and perhaps I'm a lone voice of dissent here, it's very clear that in the longer term, we need access. What you're talking about, other than making them an offer they can't refuse. We do need, you know, to get unfairly unrestricted access to collect data. I would caution at the moment rocking the boat right now, given the fact that we're going down this path. I don't know that rattling cages is going to do us any good in the path that we've chosen and may in fact do us some harm. So let me just express my concern. Based on your comment about the program.
guess that's a matter open for discussion. I would suggest that we submit all the samples simultaneously for dating. And as we've already said, we're only going to do half of this and see what happens. If it turns out that we get the right results on all of them, we can proceed with the other half. It's an awfully strong playing card at that point in time to ask for more samples from the authorities in turn. I mean, some samples that are witnessed and so forth taken from the center of the shrub so they can be redated. In other words, we're going to ask for corroboration at that point in our work. So I think that's my opinion. That's how we ought to play those cards. But again, it's clearly, the protocol is fully open for discussion, and Bob's group ought to be involved in how we play those cards.
I just wanted to make some general comments in addition to what Dr. Soons has made. I want to completely agree with what Dr. Soons has said. He has given in detail what I have been thinking more generally, and I think he has some really great suggestions that we ought to follow through on. Number one, since Isabel Piksek she knows personally Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, but we consult with her, because she still has Vatican contacts, and discuss this problem with her. But I want to remind you that in Italy, the history of the papacy has always been to leave the custodian of the shroud to make the final decisions. And since the Cardinal Archbishop of Turin is the custodian of the shroud, ultimately we have to look to him for whatever we do. So that's just a sort of a general perspective on the entire situation set in context with what Dr. Soons has made.
Russ is going to make a quick comment.
Quick note of the time, 10:47, so we got about 13 minutes left.
Okay. I was just going to, I'll use your microphone. Okay.
We need to do this quick. Do we have, Peter, do we have a window of opportunity with the exhibition announced for 2010 to, and I'm not talking about carbon-14 dating, I'm talking about just putting together proposals for just a variety of different tests that would allow us to use some of the updated equipment that is available to us now that is just not available in 78, and stuff that would work this time instead of didn't work. And is there an opportunity to approach the Pope with this next exhibition to at least get some new data? May not get all the data we're looking for, but can we get something?
Avinon and Mibi are cooperating with the permanent exposition from the Legion as a prize, and Father Guerra is the father who is in charge of that. And he has an extraordinarily good connections also with the higher layers of the Vatican. So I think that there is a big window of opportunity there to do that. So we have to be in contact or form a group, a commission, and say what do we want to do, and is it possible to do it? I think that is a pretty direct link, because the legionnaires are under the wings of the Pope, and like was being said, they are one of the fastest growing, very active groups within the church, and they have taken as their flagship, basically, the Shroud of the Reed. So we can get a lot of help from them. And I know I mean, we are in continuous contact with Father Guerra. And the top of the Legionnaires is backing Father Guerra completely now, because they've seen the results of the positive results of the expositions, and lots of visitors, lots of positive reactions. There's a very, very big window of opportunity via that to go to the top. I think that is our best bet at this moment.
I have a question myself, and maybe somebody can answer it. On June 2nd, Pope Benedict announced that the shroud would be shown in 2010. On June 3rd, the Centro, or the Archdiocese of Turin, announced there would be no science done during the 2010 exhibition.
So that window closed?
I don't know. No, I'm asking somebody that might be more knowledgeable. Is that you know, does that close the door, or is that just...
No, not really. To give you an example of what I did the last couple of weeks with my people, we made a couple of movies where you go from the 2D, build up to the 3D completely, have it moving, and then go back again. Fall back, face, etc. And we are going to talk into Reno so that during the exposition, then you have the long lines of people going to the church, and that these things can be shown.
Excellent.
So I'm working on these things personally in my field already. But we should combine that and make a commission and make a lot of proposals. And with that, we go to Reno. We talk to Giuseppe Givetti, who's the right hand of Carlo, and Bruno Papiris. You go right to the top there. I go there every 6 months, just for diplomatic reasons. And to keep all the contacts very warm, you know what's going on there.
So you don't think the door is necessarily closed?
No,
good. Julio.
I have to say that now the Vatican and the Turing people are very close. Just in 2002, they have asked for a proposal from the Board of Scientists about some new tests to be done on the shroud. 6 years after, this proposal are closed in Turin. No proposal has been published, discussed, and so on. Also, I with a group presented an interesting for me proposal that has not officially judged. No answer available up to now. So if we now make a proposal of radiocarbon date, the shroud, we can do it. But I fear that we must wait 10 years at least. So I wish to follow another way. Just a year ago, I had a long speech with Giovanni Ricci di Romagna, who told me how to behave with his samples. I have published something in various sites about Ricci, if you want, anyone can see it. In any case, Giovanni Ricci di Nuana wanted to make a radiocarbon test of his samples. Fondazione 3M has a sample, I don't know, but I think that this sample is greater than 5 × 10 milligrams, so it is possible to make a radio dating. The minimum quantity for radio dating now is about 5 milligrams. So we can have one part taken for future analysis and one part radio dated. The problem is that this sample is not official because it was taken by Ricci in 1988. In any case, before to make a test, Giovanni Ricci wanted to communicate this to the Vatican and Turin. So the procedure that I wish to follow is this. I presented the possibility to make the dating. I wish to have all the comments about any possible procedure to follow. I have just individuated some laboratories that are able to make a test. And if we decide to make this test, obviously, if also Fondazione 3M is in agreement, but I hope so, we can make just in 2002, next year, a test. This test could be not definitive, but indicating it could be a solution of many of our problems. It could be, should be indicated if there is a contamination, if it is a patch, if there are any other things. The goal of this test should be not to obtain the same data detected in 1988. If we have a data different from the results of at least 200 or 300 years, it could be a very big success. If we have such a difference, we can show why the 1988 date was wrong. And in this case, we can push the Vatican and Turin to make a further analysis on the shroud. This is the procedure that I think it is the best to follow. I want to hear.
Okay, we're down to about 5 minutes.
I just want to make a comment that what Peter was saying is that it's almost like negotiation. And if we go in there demanding a carbon dating, you know, we may not get that. So what if we were to, you know, present, you know, we have gaps in the data. We have some things that we'd like to find out that we didn't find out in 1978, or things that are, or there have been, if there's a variety of different things that we need to know. We could present a proposal that lists numerous things, including carbon dating. Now maybe we don't get carbon dating, but we come out of it with something as opposed to nothing. So that's my only proposal, is negotiate on this.
I think it might be useful to use the 1978 STIRP success really as a model. What made 1978 successful, I think, and of course I'm not a participant, but I was sort of an observer directly, followed it closely over the years, was that, first of all, a dramatic scientific event about the shroud that revealed a new finding had appeared, that is the BP-8 analyzer. They had a successful conference in 1977 following that, which was very well received. It had some prominent people there, and they had a charismatic figure, I think, in John Jackson at the time, who was referred to as the Pied Piper on more than one occasion, at least in John Heller's book. And they had a remarkable series of events, frankly, that almost bordered on the miraculous in terms of the thing coming together. I don't know that we can command miracles, but I think that's a wonderful model. And if you look at where we are today, we might be able to map an analogy on top of that. We have this remarkable three-dimensional rendering of the shroud data that I was frankly, especially with the personal computer demonstration up after the talk, I was deeply moved by that, and I think it was an extraordinarily impressive achievement. You've got that, and maybe if that, you're talking about there being presentations, if that could be in some way publicized, and if the proceedings of this conference could be packaged in such a way as to highlight emerging knowledge about the shroud. Now, the only thing we're missing is the Pied Piper, and I'm not sure who could play that role. I haven't seen a Pied Piper. Barry is not quite the Pied Piper, and I don't know that we have one. But if I read that history correctly, those guys put together an absolutely remarkable space program level procedure and protocol, which they proposed to Turin. You need something like that, but you need to have impressed people that with your professionalism, and that's what I think made it happen. They were totally professional. impressed by the sheer, or at least some of the people were totally impressed by the sheer professionalism of the team that Stirk put together. So that's a missing. I think if we can't jump that hurdle, you'd have no chance at all, and have a very little chance at best, simply because the atmosphere today is very different, and the Americans seem to be in a, as someone once said, bad odor.
Well, the other advantage Stirk had is we had the Holy Shroud Guild, Father Peter Rinaldi particularly.
Right.
Russ reminded me,
and he did a lot of
the liaison. He was the contact. He was sort of the passionate priest, sort of like what Petrus was saying of having, the Legionnaires, Father Guerra, someone. And we had Peter Rinaldi, who was a very saintly man.
We're running out of time here.
Yeah, one more. It's 11.
Who just spoke to?
It's 11. It's 11. So
okay.
It's up to you, John.
I think this is fascinating. I'm sure this could go on all day, but we do have the time constraints. We do have one more presentation. If each of you could promise to reserve your remarks about half a minute at once, we can go with it, but we need to move on.
Just my thought, Barry, and it's very simply this. I've heard some brilliant ideas, some brilliant suggestions, but they're all coming from independent sources. Unless you get together as a committee, unless you form a body that can physically put this together of the expertise that you need, we're just going to go around in never-ending circles. It's just going to go from one individual to another. You need to form a committee, and they need to be ahead of the committee, and all of these suggestions need to be coordinated and put into a package.
Yep, good point. The STIRP, it was called the STIRP team.
All right, last comment here.
As an experimenter, I know if you keep your notebook as to what you did during the experiment, even if it were done incorrectly, you can go back and actually get something good out of it because you've kept records. Are records available for what was actually done on the shroud, like what bottle came from what area, and a pretty good record of what actually happened?
When are you talking about?
With the restoration.
Yes.
Ostensibly, there are records. Are they available publicly, though?
That's what would be nice, if they were available.
I haven't seen any public availability of it. I know they kept records, but I don't know.
Well, experimenters had their own notebooks, that's what you're asking. Let me make a quick comment. This is what you made.
Relative to mounting another expedition like we did in 1978, that expedition, that group, was pretty well organized. We had several very dedicated people. But I would almost categorically say that you're almost out of time right now to try to mount something like that again, okay? Independent of where you might get the resources and all to do it, because it took a lot of planning. We went through several dress rehearsals. We did, now, it depends on the extent of what you're trying to do. If you're just going to pluck some samples out of it, that's a whole different ballgame to try to repeat, have a replay of what we did in 1978. So it depends on the spectrum of where you are. But I'm saying right now, anything on the scale of 1978, you're probably out of time.
You mean in relation to 2010?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. Let's move to that last presentation, please.
Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.